back together again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, October 22nd, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. You opened the show looking at the verdicts in the Costa Diamantis corruption and bribery trial and wondered why some public officials still put themselves in such compromising situations. Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Haar also weighed in on the Diamantis verdicts, and we chatted about a continuing controversy surrounding an influential state lawmaker. Waterbury, Watertown, GOP State Rep. Joe Paletta dropped by to talk about a new tax proposal from state Republicans, while CBS News Washington reporter Linda Kenyon also joined us with the latest news regarding the ongoing government shutdown.
I often wonder when we get stories like the Costa Diamantis trial, which you just heard from our Chris Williams over there in the newsroom, Mr. Diamantis guilty on several charges. You know, I always sit here and I wonder, here being wherever I am at the moment, I wonder, why do people do this? And that's what I want to open with today, because most of us, the vast majority of us, and I know that we've been kind of fascinated by this Diamantis case because he was once a state legislator and he was once in the budget office for Governor Ned Lamont, although there's no evidence that anybody in the legislature knew what was going on. There's no evidence that anyone in the governor's office knew what was going on. I guess when the governor found out that Diamantis was going to be in trouble here, he ended up firing him from his position. Okay, I get that. I understand that. But I start with this question because I think it's a simple one, but sometimes I was taught a long time ago that the simple questions can be the best ones. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes. So I ask this, and I put this on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WICC600 and Voice of CT. Why do some people with power and influence take bribes, even though they often get caught? Now, I know what you're going to say. Well, geez, Paul, the obvious answer here is, well, they have power and influence. I get that. I understand it. But do the power and influence cloud our judgment so severely that, as a good friend of mine often says in these cases, you didn't think you were going to get caught? And it's not like this is the first time. We've seen this in the Diamantis case. We see it on the municipal level. Former Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim has been, you know, a victim of this. Governor John Rowland, I guess former Governor John Rowland, twice. You don't just see it here in Connecticut. You see it, well, you know, for lack of a better term, all over the place. Is there a part of our psyche that, no, you know, if we had attained some sort of grandeur or some sort of high level position, that suddenly we're not going to get judged here? So you tell me. We'll start off with this. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And some people do this multiple times. Now, again, we're a second-chance society, although it's likely Mr. Diamantis is going to get hit with a whopper of a sentence or sentences on all these charges. But, you know, I often sit here and think that, and we've joked about, people have said, oh, you should run for office. No. Unless I became independently wealthy like Ned Lamont and could have some fun and spend $30, $40, $50 million on a campaign, maybe I would do it then. But actually, no. But again, the point being, why do some people do this? Now, again, Mr. Diamantis in this case was not an elected official. But what is it about the human condition that even though you ascend to a higher station of life or a station in life where obviously you're going to be under, what would be the term, a stricter magnification here, and yet you do something like this. Is it, and I don't mean to be pedantic here and to ask, you know what, Sherlock questions here, but is it the money? Is it the power? Is it a compensation for something that you never had in life? Because, again, we see it in this case. We, saw it in the Roland cases twice. It was a scenario with Joe Gannon here, the current mayor of Bridgeport, after he was on this incredible uptick in the early 90s. You had a couple of former mayors, Bill Rado, as I remember, in Naugatuck, I think. He got pinched, three times, whatever that was. Why does that happen? Why does somebody, it's easy to just be flippant and say, oh, because they're crooked. But think about this. What makes somebody crooked? Maybe it is just the money. I don't know. I've never had thousands of dollars, never, waved in my face. And at this rate where I am now at 64 years old, it's probably not going to happen. But you never know. But you tell me, in light of the verdicts today, and we'll be highlighting these on the news as we go on this afternoon with Chris Williams, in light of the verdicts handed down in the Costa Diamantis case, which I guess he could go to federal prison for years and years and years. It depends. We'll get into that later. But why do people do this? Honestly, why? It's easy to say, well, because they're powerful. All right. But why does it? Why? Why? If you've ascended to a position that gives you power and strength and at least the illusion of integrity, why ruin it? And I know money is the easy answer. But money may not be the reason. It may be, right, a symptom. Just the way if your knee hurts, the sickness or the debilitation with your knee is not the pain. The pain is a symptom. The pain is to alert you to say, hey, you're grinding, your knee is grinding, you've got tendon problems, disc problems, meniscus, whatever, you take care of that. Well, to me, the taking of the money here and doling out these favors or whatever, that's not the crime in and of itself. It's a symptom of something that people often fall prey to. What is that? You tell me. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Thank you, Mr. Announcer. No corruption here. No. I don't have enough influence. The people, hey, can we get Pacelli to our side? No! If anything, you want me on the other side. Good Lord. But sadly, right? Corrupticate again here. Costa Diamantis, a former deputy budget director, former state legislator, too, found guilty today of using his position when he ran the state's school construction office to enrich himself and his family. Just one day of deliberation. That shows you, man, when you're just going a day on 21 counts of bribery. That means they all got in the jury room, looked at each other, went, well, yeah, we can't come out yet. Let's hang here for anybody bring cards. Who's got a domino set? Backgammon? They took a day to say guilty on 21 counts. But in all seriousness, with all due respect to Mr. Diamantis, I don't know him. I don't know him from Adam. But, man, he's facing 10 to 12 years in jail, a federal prison. Now, they'll send him to Danbury or something. I don't know. But you see cases like this. And I know I was guilty of joking about the construction business. I'm shocked. Bribes in the construction business? The next thing you're going to tell me is there are bribes in the waste management business. And there are Italians in the mafia. No, I'm not insinuating anything, seriously. But what makes somebody do this? Maybe it's money. I don't know. You read or hear cases. I didn't see anything in this case regarding that. But, you know, sometimes you read and hear in cases, hear and see cases about, well, it was the money that drew me in or whatever. But man, a man, Corrupticut again. Here we go. It's sad. You had this. You had the scenarios with Joe Gannon, with John Rowland, with William Rado, with Terrence Chang, Mr. former head of the Connecticut State University system, $400K a year. He's ordering limousines, $60 steaks, and now he's got some soft job. I don't know, man. What makes people do this? Don't know. See, this is one reason why I could not. People say, oh, you should run for state rep. Why? So people can bribe me? And my son has to come visit me in Danbury in the lockup there? No. Let's start off with Ann in Milford. Ann, hi, you're on WICC. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? You know, the reason he did this, because he's got power. He's got power over everybody. They must have been kissing his toes. What do you think? And wait a minute. I want to tell you, there is money missing in these schools. You haven't gone by Platt High School here in Milford.
Okay.
The school has been open, I think, 3 or 4 years,
right,
but they still cannot finish the field next to the school.
Really?
The field next to the school looks like, remember Spring Street in New Haven?
Oh, boy. Boy, you're going back.
I want you to go by there, Paul. You could walk there. It's
okay.
2 miles from your radio station.
All right.
It's like a dump. It's got poison ivy growing. It's got poison sumac growing. It's like the dump.
And what's the reason they give for not finishing it? There's no money?
That's what I heard from one of the representatives around here.
Really?
No money. They're short of money.
Oh, really?
They bonded how much money to build the school, and they can't finish the front of the school. It looks like a dump.
Wow. And
someday you're going to get on the radio, and you're going to listen when you say it. You know what? Ann was right. It looks like a dump.
And thank you for me. And by the way, Ann and Milford, thank you. Man, Spring Street in New Haven. Oh, boy. That's going back. Ann, thank you. Appreciate it. What makes people do this? And again, I'm not trying to stand in judgment of Mr. Diamantis as a person. I don't know the guy. I'll probably never meet him. But again, I have a dear radio friend of mine, and we used to sit in the same studio at the same station, and we'd see cases like this, and he would look at me and shake his head and go, you're going to get caught. Might not be right away, but you're going to get caught. I don't know. Is it just the power? Is it just the money? I mean, but I'm so insecure. If somebody said, hey, Paul, listen, if you play ball with us here and you mention the right people on your radio station, give you 10 grand. My first inclination is not, wow, what I could do is clear up some credit cards with 10 grand. My first inclination is I'm going to get caught. They're going to dump me in a hole somewhere. Nobody will ever know what happened. Where's Paul? Jeez, he just disappeared one day. Joe in Trumbull is here. Joe, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, Joe. Why do people do this? Why do people take money? Why do they take bribes, even if they get caught?
I think, in my opinion, because this triggered, I usually, I'll tell you the truth, I just started listening to you, and I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
First, number one.
Thank you.
And this what you just said, the topic, really triggered me. So, and I was thinking as you were talking, and I'm like, you know, truly, I think it's two categories. Well, now, like, everybody's different.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody does it for different reasons,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
But I think, like, the general two categories that you have to think about, it's either the first category that somebody is doing this is because they're looking for money and power to increase their validity for that.
Yeah.
Or in this case that you're talking about, this gentleman, I don't know who this gentleman is either myself, but I'm assuming he has money and power already. And I think the key phrase there is these guys that do this that don't even need more money and power. I think it's the thrill of the race.
Maybe.
Is what I would say.
Maybe that, Joe, yeah, it's like, okay, I can pay my bills. Now what? Now I'm doing it because...
Yeah.
hey, people are coming to me, and I can do a, I can cut them breaks. You know, the breaks I never got, right? I can cut people breaks now, you know?
Now, they should be smart enough to be in power and have money knowing that, yeah, you know what? They should know, like, I can get caught for this.
But you think?
Again, it's just they have probably enough pull, power, and money that, you know what? If they do get caught, they'll figure it out something. Their power or money will settle it for them. And that's how it's always been.
Yeah.
But then, you know, till the test of time.
Yeah, I mean, this, and Joe, good stuff there, Joe. Thank you. Appreciate it. And thanks for calling in the first time. I appreciate it. Yeah. Maybe there's just, and again, with all due respect to Mr. Diamantis, I'm not judging him. I never met the guy. I'm sure there's a reason he thought he could get away with it. I don't look to get into people's psyches or anything like that. But, I mean, look, it's one thing if maybe once in your life you help out a quote-unquote associate, you know, all right, here's a couple of grand. You introduce me to the right people. I mean, there's a way to do that, you know. And I'm look, like I said last week and in the weeks of this case, I'm sure this, I mean, in the construction business, come on. In any other business, come on. You don't think, in just about any business, this happens. But to this point, 21 counts of bribery, extortion, conspiracy, and lying to the feds. Man, that's not knocking off a convenience store. Happy to welcome at this time every Wednesday, senior editor and columnist. Boy, those are some lofty titles. Dan Haar from Hearst Connecticut Media. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir. How might you be today?
Not guilty.
Ah, yes, I knew you'd have something to say about the Mr. Diamantis, who, unlike you, Dan, was found guilty. 21 counts, doesn't look good for him going, I guess, to prison now, depending on what the judge says. Big sigh of relief in the governor's office, you think, on this one?
Yeah, I mean, my takeaway point is that, look, this is a upper level or upper mid-level, I guess you'd say, state official who was engaged in bribery and related offenses, which is bad. You know, you don't want to see that. That's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll get what he gets. And of course, as you know, there's another trial. So this isn't over yet. The trial on the other stuff having to do with dropping the Medicaid charge, I think that's coming up next year, right? Mm-hmm. And he still has to have that trial, right? You know, this doesn't abrogate that. But so far, the Lamont administration and the governor himself can breathe a sigh of relief because there was fear in, you know, I would say not necessarily heavily warranted fear, but there was some concern
mm-hmm.
that some things would come out that made the governor not look good. The governor would say that he never had, and he did say to me and others, that he never had anything to worry about because there was nothing that was going to come out because he fired Diamantis in October of 21,
yeah.
the minute he found out about this. And while that may be true, you never know what's going to come out in a trial in which Costa Diamantis was very, very closely linked with arguably the single most powerful person or one of the top three powerful people in the Lamont administration, as in any administration, the budget chief. And so, and she was not implicated in this trial either.
McCall.
And so a sigh of relief all around that it wasn't viewed or presented by prosecutors and by Diamantis himself as a broad sort of metastasized malignancy, and it was just kept to him.
Will this, though, Dan, is there enough of that to prevent the Republicans, you think, from rolling out the corrupt-to-cut narrative on this, or will they try and do that, you think, anyway, in an election year next year?
Well, they'll try, and they can make the case to voters, but it's, you know, had this gone the other way and had either the prosecutors brought things out or the defense brought things out, it would have been a lot easier for the Republicans. Right now, they have to make the sort of usual, and I mean usual on both sides,
mm-hmm.
The usual sort of, you know, guilt by implication thing. You know, that same of four stuff having to do with the company that did COVID testing that the governor's wife, Annie Lamont, it was invested in.
Yeah.
It's things like that. And they can say what they want. It doesn't really necessarily add up to a pattern of corruption unless you have an actual pattern of corruption that comes to his door. This was, let's say, on the yard, but not the door.
Okay.
And that's a relief to the governor.
Long as it's not in the house. Dan Haar is with us, Hearst Connecticut Media. Mr. Haar featuring, following up on the governor. He made it not so terribly unclear. He's very clear about that he wasn't happy with that, you know, that sign that Senator Saud Anwar took a picture behind, kind of implicating that the president should maybe have a cessation of life, we should say, due to cholesterol at the No Kings March. The governor's saying, hey, he didn't like it. He thinks Dr. Anwar should apologize. Doesn't seem to be any indication that he will.
No, I think it's blowing over, and some people are happy that it's blowing over. And there's a lot of the reason I wrote the column that I wrote, in which I did call for Dr. Anwar, Senator Anwar, to apologize. It was sort of a half-hearted call for a half-hearted apology, right? Because what the Republicans are doing is a whole lot worse. But the Republicans are not a medical doctor referring to, as if you have three listeners who haven't heard it already, cholesterol, do your job.
Yeah.
Right. And with a picture of a cheeseburger. And it didn't have to say Donald Trump. It didn't have to have a picture of Donald Trump, and it didn't have one. But so, a medical doctor should probably. And again, it's not just that he posed with the picture. It's that he chose to highlight that picture among all pictures.
Yeah.
Another legislator today said to me, another legislator who has nothing to do with that incident, said to me, well, listen, we are asked by constituents to pose all the time with them with signs that we don't even get a chance to read. And I said, I understand that, but you then don't highlight those signs on your Facebook page.
But listen,
it must be said, and I credit my friend and fellow columnist, Colin McEnroe, who pointed out on Facebook yesterday that I should have said in the column that only weeks earlier, Senator Saud Anwar wrote an op-ed calling for the governor to not run for the election.
Because he's
unqualified. And by unqualified, he obviously doesn't mean professionally unqualified. He was talking about the governor's unwillingness to tax rich people and do certain other things that the progressive wing of the party wants to see. So I was negligent in not pointing out in that column that the political. Now, I'm not accusing Lamont. Lamont has the same opinion I do.
Yeah.
And Dr. Saud Anwar has never done anything but be the greatest guy in the world to me. I can tell you he's extremely patient. And I should say also that far from being belligerent with Republican opponents, he is absolutely nothing but calm, steadfast, patient, and giving of his time. I've seen it over and over at the Capitol. So it seemed out of character to me, but nonetheless, it is what it is, as another former governor who went to jail said.
And let's wind up this week's chapter of the Dan Haar Show. Netflix, you can rent it, whatever. One of your favorite topics, Pura. We now have
Are we charging for this?
We now have a full lineup, a full starting lineup, Dan Haar. Get a scorecard coming from Pura. Is this going to make a hill of beans difference or not? Or maybe will we get along a little better with Eversource and Avangrid and UI?
Yes, this lineup of five Pura commissioners is very, very, very well balanced in the sense that you have one Democratic former legislator, one Republican former legislator, one investor in the power industry, one professor of policy in the power industry, and one lawyer active in the power industry right now in Connecticut.
There you go.
That is an all-star cast, and you can see why the governor couldn't reappoint the one he appointed. And so they're going to do a great deal of healing. And a great deal of mediating with Eversource and UI, and it's going to be a much more kumbaya situation. But no, it's not going to lead to lower rates or higher rates. It's going to lead to a rational energy policy that in which we pay the rates that we need to pay in order to sustain and cover the infrastructure that we need to have.
And that is a rational way to look at it. Excellent. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist. Dan, thank you as always. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll chat next week. Thank you, sir.
Great to be here.
All right, thanks. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Yeah, now we finally have some new adults running Pura, and this time maybe they can get along with Avangrid and the parent company there, Avangrid of UI, and Eversource. Acting like adults. What a concept. What a concept. All right. Of course, coming up on an election year, both sides are going to be talking taxes here from Hartford. Now, the Republicans rolled out a plan yesterday to enhance some deductions for property taxes, where in some areas of Connecticut, we're getting sky high property tax rates, and they're really maybe oftentimes trapping people in their homes. So, if they want to sell or maybe get a certain price here, what can we do here? And joining us right now is Waterbury Watertown Republican State Rep Joe Paletta, who was part of the group of Republicans introducing, a proposed sharpening of some tax policy here that may help folks in Connecticut. He's back on the show. Joe, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
So explain this plan, Joe. What are you and the Republican caucus and the people who came up with this, explain the plan, what the GOP is proposing here, because a lot of people are getting crunched on property taxes.
Sure. So, Paul, you know, I spent a number of years on the town council in the town of Watertown, and, you know, we all know that the property tax is a big issue for people across the state of Connecticut. It's a regressive tax. It affects communities. It affects people on fixed income. So, the Republicans have proposed to triple the current tax credit up to $1,000 for qualifying individuals, which would ultimately let them deduct that and give them some relief. So we're seeing, because we had some mayors up there with us, and they're all kind of speaking the same language, where they're saying that the reval disproportionately affected people. Some saw 35-40% tax increases in the last 3 or 4 years. So what the Republicans are saying is to take some money, that $501 million in volatile revenue, and give it back to the taxpayers, because truthfully, they were overtaxed in the form of a property tax credit.
So do you anticipate, Joe, getting any votes from the other side on this, or are they going to dig in, the majority Democrats here? And because, look, everybody knows this could be a big issue come the election next year.
It's a great question, and it actually came up during the press conference. So we will run an amendment to offer this as, if we're called into special session in November, to offer this as an alternative. However, you know, we've found that the majority party wants to spend this $500 million on, projects and funding items that potentially could be cut from the federal government. What Republicans are saying is, hold on a minute, we have a $4.5 billion rainy day fund, so why don't we take this $501 million that you're talking about and give it back to the taxpayers? So, yes, it's going to be met with opposition. I would surmise that it's probably going to fail along party lines. But we believe we have the better idea. We think we should be giving it back to people rather than spending it on projects.
Hey, Joe, I would think, exactly, I would think, now there are not a lot of things up there, Joe, that are bipartisan. I would think property tax relief would be one of them. But hey, maybe I'm the dummy, Joe. I don't know. But to me, wouldn't it be nice if both sides could get together in your chamber and then in the state house and say, hey, this is a good idea, right?
You're 100% correct. And just remember, you know, on a bipartisan basis, we put the fiscal guardrails in place in 2017. It was Republicans that came up to the plate and said, we offered a solution, unlike what's going on in D.C. right now, where the Democrats are obstructing and closing the government down. Republicans saw the Democrats in a stalemate in Connecticut in 17. And we said, look, let's pass a budget that we can all come to the table on, because we can't continue to operate like this. So as a result of that good fiscal policy in 2017, we have amassed a large rainy day fund. So now we find ourselves in a good position. Our credit rating is up. You know, we've been able to cut taxes in the past couple of years. So why not give some of this money back? That's our idea. Let's give it back to the taxpayers, to the property tax, the people that are, you know, already burdened with a 35% increase.
All right. Republican State Rep Joe Paletta, District 68, Waterbury and Watertown, explaining that Republican tax plan, and we shall see what shakes out. Joe, always good to chat with you, man. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great afternoon.
All right. Joe Paletta, Republican State Rep, District 68, Waterbury and Watertown. What goes on? Is this government shutdown? Any end in sight? Let's ask one of our people in D.C., Linda Kenyon, CBS News. Linda, good afternoon. How are you? Is there any light, Linda, at the end of the tunnel on this, or are both sides still dug in hard here?
Well, I think, Paul, that the word here that would best describe both sides would be intractable.
Wow.
And that's not a very positive way of viewing whether this government shutdown is going to end anytime soon. It's now the second longest government shutdown in U.S. history. It's now entering its fourth week. And Senate Republicans and Senate Democrats are really in the spotlight right now. The House passed a continuing resolution, or CR, to continue present government funding until November 21st. And they've been out of town now for the past few weeks because they say we did our job. It's now up to the Senate. And it is stalled in the Senate. There is so many bad feelings going on right now as both sides dig in, and I see no wiggle room whatsoever.
It looks like, too, Lyndon, maybe I'm just misreading this, but I'm seeing a lot more kind of TV and radio jockeying here. I saw Catherine Clark out today from the Democratic side, and John Thune was out a few days ago. So this is, as much as this is a legislative battle here, this is kind of a PR battle, too, isn't it? Kind of trying to sell your point on this. I'm seeing more of that.
Oh, absolutely. This is really a battle in the court of public opinion. The Democrats are making their case. The Republicans are making their case. Historically, I would say we have seen that when there are government shutdowns, the American people have a tendency to blame the power, the party that is in power at the time. And at this point, it is the Republicans who are in power in the House, the Senate, and the White House. So if there's any backlash, it may come and wash up against the GOP. That doesn't mean it's absolutely going to. That just seems to have been what has happened in the past, and trying to see if past is now going to be prologue. What we have now is the fact that the Senate rules operate differently than in the House, and that means that, among other things, the Senate minority, in this case, at this point in time, is the Democrats are the minority, they have rights. That means they can hold up legislation requiring a two-thirds majority. The Republicans are the majority, but they do not have a two-thirds majority. So the Democrats are exercising their minority rights. When the Republicans are the minority, they have the same rights. And these things are cyclical. And so right now they're discussing the possibility, the Senate Republicans, of getting rid of the filibuster.
I saw that,
but there's a lot of people feel that, you know, that might be touching the third rail of congressional politics because, again, when these things, you know, one day you're the majority, and the next election you might be in the minority, you could be voting away your own rights.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of people who are very concerned about doing that right now.
Linda Kenyon, CBS News. Linda, thank you as always. We really appreciate it. Take care. Have a great weekend. We appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Linda Kenyon there, CBS News.